Peter Gray und
WHCLFM, Clinton, New York. I'm your host, Pete Bianco. This show is titled The Ringer. And on the telephone with me, I have Alexis Baden-Mayer.
Hi, Pete.
How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Good. Could you tell us what the you're with the Organic Consumers Association?
That's right. We're an advocacy group for a strong organic standards, and we also fight the worst practices of industrial agriculture, including GMOs, genetically modified organisms.
And what is the latest news on what's happening in the fight on GMOs?
Well, it's very exciting. We have a ballot initiative in Washington State coming up this November 5th, but in fact, in Washington, they vote by mail, so voting has already begun in Washington State.
Oh, wow.
You can get news about the ballot initiative at Yes on 522. The ballot initiative is Initiative 522, so you can go to yesonfivetwotwo.org to see the ads that we're running on television, to see the arguments for why genetically modified foods need to be labeled. And in a nutshell, Consumers want the right to know. 93% of Americans, when polled, say they want the right to know what they're eating, and especially they want to know if their food contains genetically modified organisms.
For people who want to contribute to the campaign to label these GMOs, is there a way that they can support that financially?
Absolutely. Yep, you can go to yeson522.org, and the donate button is prominently displayed. But there is another really fun thing that you can do. They have a computer program where you can make calls to Washington State voters for free from your computer, and it's a computer program that gives you a script as well as a telephone number, so it's incredibly easy to do, but a whole lot of fun. People are very, very receptive to learning about what's in their food, and most people don't actually know that they're eating genetically modified organisms. So this is a fun and very helpful thing that you can do if you go to yeson522.org. Very prominently, you'll see a volunteer button, and that will connect you with the phone bank.
Wonderful. Any other GMO issues that we should be aware of at this time?
Well, yes. As we start winning GMO labels at the state level, we're going to see pushback at the federal level. And today, the Farm Bill is being debated in a joint committee of the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. They're trying to work out the differences between their two versions of the Farm Bill. This is a five-year bill that funds farm programs, but it also sets agriculture policy. And one of the things that's being debated is whether states should have the right to regulate agriculture, period. It's amazing that Congress could consider taking away states' rights to regulate agriculture, but that's actually... There's a provision in the House version of the Farm Bill, and today they are debating this in a joint committee, and hopefully they'll take that part out. That won't end up in the final version of the bill. But if you all are concerned about preserving states' rights to regulate agriculture, you can call your congressperson, and the number at the Capitol Hill switchboard where you can be connected to your two senators and your representative is 202-224-3121. So call that number and say that you oppose the King Amendment and you support states' rights to regulate agriculture. Again, that number is 202-224-3121. Call Congress today to oppose the King Amendment and support states' rights to regulate agriculture.
And what does the financial situation look like in Washington for the labeling bill? How much money are we seeing the companies like Monsanto and Syngenta spending on this?
Yep, they certainly are outspending us. The figure is $11 million last time I checked, but as we get into the final days of the campaign, a lot more money will be spent. So we are being outspent about 4-1. And actually, that's not quite as bad as it was last year in California, where we only very narrowly lost our right to know about GMOs in our food. So I think that there is, even though we are being outspent, there is hope. And there are some companies that didn't donate to the No campaign this year that did last year. In fact, Unilever, which is one of the largest companies in the world, and also the parent company that owns Ben & Jerry's, a very popular brand that has been fighting GMOs for a long time. They are one of the first and still one of the only ice cream brands that made a commitment not to use genetically modified growth hormone on its dairy cows. So Ben & Jerry's is a good brand, but their big parent company was fighting consumers' right to know in California. And this year, they're not. So I think we're seeing some steps forward, especially since last year we called a boycott of all the companies that were funding the No campaign against consumers' right to know about GMOs. So there still is a lot of money against us, but it's being shrunk day by day because companies are really realizing that consumers want the right to know what's in their food.
Well, it's good to hear that we're moving in the right direction. Any other ballot initiatives coming up with the right to know?
Yes, in fact, 2014 is going to be a very exciting year for the non-GMO movement. We're going from ballot initiatives to label GMOs to ballot initiatives to stop the planting and growing of genetically modified crops in important seed-growing regions. Oregon is one of the most important seed-growing regions in the entire world. There are only a handful of places that have agricultural regions like Oregon that are so perfectly suited to growing pure seed. And currently in Oregon, there are very few, if not zero, genetically modified crops being grown on a large scale. And the Agriculture Department has deliberately kept out genetically modified canola because they know that that canola will cross-pollinate and contaminate the seeds that are grown for the world market. So in 2014, in May, there will be two ballot initiatives, one in Jackson County and one in Josephine County. And this is the Rogue Valley of Oregon, a very important seed-growing region, a very important vegetable-growing region, and a stronghold for organic and non-GMO farmers. But Syngenta has come in with its genetically engineered sugar beets, and this has already caused organic farmers to stop growing table beets and stop growing related vegetables like chard because of fears of contamination and because they know that they don't have a market for contaminated food. Organic consumers want real non-GMO food, and if they get contaminated, they lose their markets. So this has been very bad for the farmers in the Rogue Valley of Oregon, but they've decided to fight back, and they're going to put up two ballot initiatives in their region that would end the planting of genetically modified crops.
Thank you so much for your time, Alexis.
My pleasure, Pete. I love talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Clocks by Coldplay. And we just heard from Alexis Bayer Mayer from Organic Consumers Association on GMOs. You're listening to Pete Bianco's program, The Ringer, on Hamilton Radio in Clinton, New York. And our next guest is John Bilyeu. So, John, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great. I'm going to give a little introduction to John. John Bilyeu is a naturopathy doctor, PhD, an internationally recognized leader, researcher, and teacher in the field of music and sound healing. He is the founder of Biosonic Repatterning and the author of Music and Sound in the Healing Arts and Human Tuning, the Science and Art of Sound with Tuning Forks. He's also a musician. Yes, we have that. We have that he's a musician. My name is Donna, and I'm a co-host with Pete now, and I'll be joining you for the second half of this program where we speak with John Bilyeu and about his work. Now, John is giving a workshop at the Open Center in New York City, New York. Some of their programs are streamed. However, this one is not, but if you'd like more information and have an opportunity perhaps to go to New York City to meet John and attend his workshop, the telephone number for the New York Open Center is 212-219-2527. Do you have a pen and paper handy? 212-219-2527. And now I'm going to introduce a little further John Bilyeu. In his workshop, he will be, and I'd like to read this because I want you to see the whole field of what he deals with. He'll be teaching sound healing, an approach developed by himself, which integrates energy healing systems, science, molecular research, and spiritual wisdom. In his teachings, students will learn practical methods of using tuning forks to tune the nervous system, stimulate trigger points, and align our posture to visual harmonics. A lot of interesting terminology here. Special emphasis is given to developing systematic evaluation methods based on structural analysis and the five elements. Evaluation methods, which can also be used for healing, include postural analysis related to sonic intervals and five-element evaluation using voice and movement patterns. The material is supported by clinical examples and stories based on John Bilyeu's 33 years of practice. Sound methods will include the use of Pythagorean tuning forks, auto or osteophonic tuning forks, and five-element music and voice analysis. I feel like I'm standing in front of an incredible smorgasbord of materials, and I don't know what to start with. John, thank you for being here with us. It all sounds fascinating and wonderful. Could you tell us a little about yourself, please?
My life has been dedicated to the healing arts and music and learning how the two interrelate. I started my career in psychiatry. I was a psychologist and head therapist at Bellevue Psychiatric Hospital in New York City for 5 years. Then I went to the City University of New York, where I became a professor for 3 years. And then I went into private practice in New York City. And eventually, because of my work and my writing, I began to go around the world. I had practices in four other countries at one point, and now I just teach and I do performances, and I combine my teaching and performance basically all over the world.
Okay, thank you. Could you explain to us, please, how you use sound for healing, how it works for you?
Well, my interest primarily was post-traumatic stress, and I began working with sound as a way of working with the nervous system. Then I realized at some point that basically everybody has some sort of post-traumatic stress on a continuum.
Yes.
And what I thought was for my veterans, I was working with veterans at the time, and just primarily for them and their basically war traumas. I began to realize everybody has their own personal war traumas in their own way. So I began taking the sound work that I was doing with music and with tuning forks primarily, and then sharing it with anyone that I could. I saw really, really good results, and by somewhere around 2002, I was able to go back into the laboratory and then test out in a more reductionist way, in a more scientific way, the good results that I was seeing. So, and then I realized that yes, this is really for everybody.
I'd like to go to your book here, Human Tuning, Sound Healing with Tuning Forks, which is kind of an instructional book for people as a beginner fundamental level about your work and how they could begin to be engaged with it themselves. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's for everybody to read,
mm-hmm.
And even advanced students read it because it's a kind of work that can keep growing
mm-hmm.
inside of you. But it's definitely meant to be an introductory book, for sure, especially the first chapters.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't mean to belittle it in that way. I wanted to have people not feel intimidated by approaching this material through this book. That's why I explained it the way I did, because that's also the way I experienced it. There's a lot of good information there. Now, you mention in your book, right in the beginning, about an anechoic chamber. Could you explain that to us, please, and how that got you into this work?
Well, it's called an anechoic chamber.
Thank you.
And it means a chamber without echoes, and it's a room designed by engineers to be totally silent and totally dark. And I went, there was one in the lab that I worked at in New York University, and I was able to go and use it. When I sat inside of it, and the doors were closed, you're in total silence in terms of a scientific perspective, and yet within, I'd say, 30 seconds to a minute, you begin hearing all sorts of sounds, because those sounds are actually coming from inside of your body. So I began to meditate and be with those sounds in my body to learn more about them. And at a certain point, I could hear a very high-pitched sound, and I realized that was my nervous system. I talked with one of the psychologists in the lab. We talked about this, and we understood that to be the nervous system operating. And then I began to meditate on that sound, and eventually I realized, after some experiences, that I could tune my nervous system the way one might tune a guitar or piano or a string instrument, because my nervous system could be either too high-pitched or too low-pitched. But the moment I would sound tuning forks, my nervous system wouldn't train itself. It would come into the exact tone of the tuning forks, so I could tune my nervous system up and down just through sound. And then I realized that would affect how I saw the world and experienced life, because I kept at that time many what we call phenomenological journals on my experiences within the chamber and how the sounds affected me outside of the chamber.
Okay.
And that was the beginning of how I began working.
I'd like to ask you very specific questions now about how this actually works. I understand somewhat of the theory that you've explained to us. However, how specifically do you do this? We know if you have a tuning fork and you wrap it against a table or whatever, something, or even shake it, it vibrates. Then would you put that right to a certain area of the body so that that vibration is, it's almost like a type of acupuncture, only with sound instead. Is that possible?
That's absolutely possible. One of the tuning forks we use is called an auto-tuning fork. It means osteophonic because it vibrates bones or tissue. And it could be tapped and placed directly on the body, and it could be used directly on acupuncture points. It would be like a sonal pressure. It'll vibrate the points, or it could be used directly on bones, because bones really are, people think they're solid, but they're not. They're actually crystalline in structure. Bones are oscillators.
Right.
So the moment you put a tuning fork on, it causes your whole body to vibrate with the frequency of that tuning fork.
I see. So could you give us an example of perhaps someone that you assisted who came with a specific problem and how you utilized this technique to assist them and what the result was for them specifically, please?
Well, it depends on how I'm going to integrate it, but if I can give you one example. My favorite is I play golf, and all the guys I play golf with carry my tuning forks inside of their golf bag because if they have a strained elbow or something like that, they'll take and put it on the bone around their elbow, and it will give them relief immediately. In my private practice, if there's tension in a joint, you learn how to palpate to find out what would be proper tension at a joint. If the tension is too high or low, there could be pain associated with it, and the moment you put the tuning fork on, almost instantaneously the pain goes away. And so I've used it for many years just for that purpose.
Could this be a type of kind of internal massage for the areas that are blocked from constriction of stress or tension or some type of obstruction that that the vibration works on a much more infinitesimal, finer level than a gross manipulation, so that it stimulates the air and the cells to relax and open up and facilitate the life force to move through that area so that healing can establish itself again, or the proper balance, let's put it that way.
Absolutely. I think there's no doubt about it. It's, the science is clear as could be. It's, when you put the fork on, it spikes a molecule called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is a vasodilator. It's a signaling molecule for all sorts of good things to happen to your whole body. And it's also antibacterial and antiviral and anti-tumor. So it's the research is clear about this vibration as it goes into the body is going to help a lot in a general way. And I'm primarily a generalist more so than a specific focus kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
In science, we call it general systems theory.
Right.
So I look at what I call the big picture of tuning, and then once you get the big picture online, everything else tends to fall in place more easily.
Okay. I'd like to ask about these nitric oxide cells. Are these specific cells in the body that hold nitric oxide that's released at certain times, like a part of the immune system, for example, that it has a function within that system, or that they release this, or how does that work? Do you know?
Yeah. Nitric oxide is it's a molecule, one nitrogen, one oxygen, and it's primarily activated by immune cells, endothelial cells, which are the linings of your blood vessels, and nerve cells. My interest originally was in the activation of nitric oxide as a neurotransmitter because in post-traumatic stress and depression, you find a lack of or compromise in nitric oxide rhythms in the neurological tissue. And I also then became interested in how it can modulate the immune system and the heart cells as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, it has a profound effect. In fact, in most every disease you could imagine, there's nitric oxide will be a factor in that disease.
Does this stimulate those cells to produce and release nitric oxide? Is that how it works? Do you know?
Yes, it stimulates the cells to produce and release nitric oxide in a rhythmic fashion. It rises, and it's a gas that arises and fall over a six-minute time period. So you're actually giving a signal for your cells to wake up and release it again if they're compromised in their ability to do it.
Reminds me a little bit of going into an oxygen chamber, how we all need oxygen, and shortage of oxygen compromises the whole body's function. And then if you have an infusion of oxygen to the whole body, it stimulates it to rise to its fuller potential of healing.
It's similar. It's very similar.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. Now, you had mentioned to me when I spoke with you briefly before, as I understand it, that you have used this in the use of drug addiction. Could you explain to me if you've had a patient that you've dealt with in that way and how it has worked, please?
Yes, I've had hundreds and hundreds of patients I've dealt with sound and drug addiction. One of the main, in the 12-step program, which is we use a lot in America with drug addiction, it says the first step is a higher power.
Yes.
And music and sound have been used for thousands of years to access higher spiritual states of consciousness. And so, directly, the patient tends to go into the sound and find higher states of awareness that are better than the drugs that they're taking. And our research has pretty much validated this at this point, that we can trace molecules that not only are nitric oxide but are similar to opiates and marijuana and even DMT or ayahuasca type molecules that the body makes that could be associated with higher states of consciousness that are now made through the listening to sound.
Like I said, it's within the capacity of the body to produce these things. Otherwise, it wouldn't be happening in the first place with the facilitation of these other agents. So this is another agent in a way that can stimulate the body to naturally produce and facilitate this itself without those things. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and much better than usually the substance that someone's dependent upon or addicted to.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather use sound because it's much more effective and has less side effects, to say the least.
Right. So is this something that someone would have their own tuning fork and eventually they'd be able to service themselves with that until they, after a while, get the feeling of how to kind of move into that space on their own, and then they can do it independently? Would it work like that?
No, I want everyone to just have a tuning forks, and in the morning and the evening, just tune themselves and learn how to train their nervous system to proper tuning.
Mm-hmm.
And once they've done that, they don't even need the tuning forks anymore. They can just think the sound.
That's what I was thinking. It's kind of like tuning an instrument. At first, some people need a tuner, and then after a while, they can tune it up themselves. They don't need the tuner anymore because they know what they're going for. They know what that feels like, what the space is like, and they can go bring themselves to that space on their own. Correct?
That's the ideal. That's exactly the ideal that mm-hmm. that I want.
Yeah, I understand. That's wonderful. So, is there something you'd like to add to this now, or something in addition you'd like to say to us about your work? We're not ending the interview at this point, but I just want to give you an opportunity if there's something you wanted to say.
No, only that my work is, you know, as I started out with a very specific purpose, and then I realized it's for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while to get out of the hospital way of thinking and university way of thinking, but once I was able to see the effects of it on myself and my family and everybody around me, it was a very exciting moment, and then I realized that maybe I could just tune the world, you know, versus just someone in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like nature has a whole system of renewing, regenerating, maintaining, and healing itself, and the body certainly does. I remember speaking to a heart surgeon quite a while ago who I said to him, what's the most interesting part of your work for you? And he said, what's most interesting to me is not what us doctors do, but what nature does to heal the body. He said, you know, we can only do so much, and then nature steps in and takes care of all the rest in ways that we couldn't possibly do. So
that's why I'm a naturopathic physician.
Right.
I specialize in the tuning forks are tuned to exactly how plants and body grows in nature.
That's what I wanted to get to, exactly. That's what I was leading towards. Go ahead, I'm sorry. You have a system here where you say that you work with the five elements and the system of nature. So all of this is based on bringing the body into alignment to natural functioning and the functioning of nature itself. Is that correct?
That's 100% correct. That's what I do.
Okay, that's wonderful. Would you like to explain briefly about the five elements and how that works for people who aren't familiar with those concepts?
Yeah, well, the five elements, guys, if I had, that comes from more alchemy and Western medicine, because Eastern medicine, I was originally, as a psychologist, I was trained as a Jungian analyst, so I looked at what we call archetypes and so on. But if I had to do it again, I might change it to first gear, second gear, third gear, and neutral, because each element is like a gear that makes us move faster or slower. And it's like, and we look at our body as a car driving down the road of life, and in order to shift gears, we need neutral, which is, we call ether element, but it's really just neutral. And the slowest speed would be earth, the next speed would be water, the next speed would be fire, and the fastest speed would be air. And so every event in life requires really a different speed and shifting gears. And when you can shift and learn how to do it correctly, in science we would call that adaptation to a stressor, because now you've shifted what you were doing and you adapted what you needed to adapt to. When you fail to shift gears, then we call it distress, and now you have a whole different physiology, and that's what causes nitric oxide to flatline or be compromised and begins the disease process. So the five elements we call ether, air, fire, water, earth, I could say are neutral, first gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, are just really ways of making the rhythms of our life go faster or slower in order to meet the challenges and requirements of our life.
It makes me think of meditation and breathing and how people will say, you know, if you're really stressed out, just stop and breathe and, you know, calm down so that possibly you create that space, that neutral space for your body and for nature then to reset itself and readjust.
That's correct. Yeah, meditation is neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have neutral, you still have to drive your drive. So then you go to a place where you can shift gears, whereas if you try to shift gears without neutral, actually, my patients will say life is a grind. because you don't know how to. Yeah, you don't know how to get back. Yeah, because you don't know how to get back to neutral to change. So
you're grinding your gears.
You're grinding your gears, trying to go somewhere but stay where you're at the same time. It's and so I think that the ancients understood this quite well. And they gave the names of the gears: ether, air, fire, water, earth. And I think it's really very applicable to modern stress science. And far more advanced, in fact, it's a clinical method than what we have today in modern stress science.
We're getting, unfortunately, near the end of the program here. Maybe we can have you on another time or continue to work with you. I want you to have an opportunity to mention whatever it is you'd like to about your work and how people can contact you or get more information about what you're doing. How would you like to present that to people? Do you have a phone number, an address, or
The best way is a website.
Website, go ahead.
My website is biosonics, biosonics.com, and you can reach me through the website. There's all sorts of free things in the website, products, and ways to get to me and my business, and learn about where I'm teaching at, and so on.
Are you still seeing clients at all for work, for healing work, or no?
I'm 66 years old. I saw patients, thousands of patients, and now I'm just focused primarily on writing and teaching around the world and doing sound healing performances.
Okay. All right. So that's biosonics.org?
And I definitely train healing arts practitioners. I have my skills, and I'd like to pass them on. That's my goal right now.
And what's where and how do you do that?
Well, like I say, when I teach classes at the Open Center,
okay,
we have 2 days, and then the third day is always a clinic. I always teach clinics for people who are practicing and how to apply the work and integrate it in some modalities that they practice.
Well, we had something else we were going to do these last 2-3 minutes, but I can't resist asking you the question of how you think all of the sound that we're immersed and enmeshed in more and more intensely, especially if you're living within a city. You know, you have the traffic noise, you have, you know, all levels of noise, Wi-Fi, things you can hear, things you can't hear, radios very loudly playing in all the stores. How is that impacting on us? You know, we don't have a consciousness about it, just moving through our day. How does that affect our physiology and our health?
Well, I think it affects us. It's just a matter of how we are relating to it and adapting to it. You know, and for instance, I lived in New York City for 30 years, and I learned to love the sounds of horns, sirens, and everything. So it was, for one person, it's a stressor that can cause problems, but for another person who adapts to it, it could be something that could take you to other, like music, it could be like a concert.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it has to do with our ability to relate sounds differently, have a different relationship with them that we think aren't musical, make them music. And the other has to do with, I think all these sounds are here because we're in a time of chaos, and that means out of chaos comes a new order, a new possibility, and everything's changing. I was there for 9/11. I can tell you, I thought it was the beginning of a world change, and we're seeing the ripples of that with thousands of waves and frequencies everywhere. And our job, as always, as human beings, is to adapt and change. And as we do that, we're going to create an even better life. So my view of all these sounds is that they're there to change our neural nets, our neural pathways, greater neuroplasticity, to make us bigger, better, and more empowered human beings.
Oh, well, bless you. Thank you so much, John. Are you there, Pete?
Yes.
I think we have like 30 seconds left to close up the program. I'd like to thank John Billier, our guest, very much for everything he shared with us and for all of his work. We hope to speak with you again. And we're wishing you good luck on your Open Center workshop. The telephone number again. Well, people can go online, opencenter.org, and see your work there, and they can contact you on your website. Thank you very much, John. We'll say goodbye for now. You're very welcome, and good luck to you.
Okay,
bye for now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
0.7 WCHL, Clinton, New York. The Ringer with Pete Bianco, guest host Donna for today. Pete's show, The Ringer, is on every Wednesday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. We hope to hear from you. We hope to tune in with you again next Wednesday. Have a good week. Bye now. Thank you for listening.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right, this is another new song off our new album. It's coming out in October. This one's called Everybody Out There.
Thank you.